Chapter 10, Saipan and Guam and the Philippines. After living in Southern California for 29 years, I got a job as a newspaper editor on Saipan with the Marianas Variety. Not being the most knowledgeable person about geography, I wasn't sure where Saipan was. I went to the Pasadena map store and there on their giant map of the world was a group of islands, the Marianas, anchored by Guam. Okay, so now I knew where Saipan was, but didn't realize that it is exactly halfway around the world from Los Angeles. Getting there was a grueling experience. I packed all my portable belongings in two giant duffel bags, including my Buddhist altar, and went to the international section of the LA airport. We flew into Honolulu in the afternoon, a 5-hour flight, but the flight to Guam wasn't until the next morning. So, after a night of tossing and turning and not much breakfast, we were on our way, 7-hour flight, to Guam. Because the flight crosses the international dateline, a day is lost. I needed to be on Saipan on Monday, so I lost Sunday, when we landed on Guam. The flight to Saipan was only 30 minutes, but since Guam is a U.S. territory, I had to be processed through immigration, customs and passport control. I arrived on Saipan at 5 p.m. Monday to 80-degree weather and 90% humidity in mid-April. I was met by the owner of the newspaper Abed Yunis, a Palestinian who had moved to Saipan several years before, married to a Chamorro, local, woman and had 6 children. He took me to the house he owned where the bookkeeper, Sixto, a Filipino, and a reporter, Dan, from California, stayed. I had worn a cotton suit for my travels, which by now, was soaking wet. I quickly changed into a clean blouse and he took me out to dinner. He explained that the paper was published twice a week, Tuesdays, and Fridays. Dan was the main reporter, but I was expected to not only put the paper together but also contribute stories, photos and edit stories by Dan and a reporter from Palau, Fermin. And, of course, write an editorial for each edition. What I didn't tell anyone when I went to the office the next day, in the car we all used, is all my training in journalism had been before the advent of computers. Dan asked me if I had ever worked on an Apple computer and I honestly told him, no. He showed me the basics and I started my newspaper career learning how to use the computer while doing my best not to let everyone know that I was in virgin territory. The newspaper was tabloid size and had a production line where it was collated and then distributed to markets, the government offices, and the few newsstands on the island. Abed took me to the monthly Rotary Club luncheon meeting to introduce me to the movers and shakers on the island. It turned out I was the guest speaker and I quickly talked about how happy I was to be on Saipan. I also mentioned I had noticed a lot of construction was in process, and learned that many hotels were under construction to accommodate Saipan's reputation as the best honeymoon destination for Japanese couples. I jumped right into my new job and wrote a couple of stories, edited Fermin and Dan's stories, cropped the photos, wrote headlines and stayed all night helping the artists place the stories. Every Monday night and Thursday night were the same. There was always something that was wrong, or a sudden need for a story that was unplanned. The crew except for Dan and Fermin were all contract workers from the Philippines. They were paid minimum wage $2.35 an hour, lived in shacks, and most of them saved money to send to relatives back home. Many of them worked 6 days a week, having Sunday off to go to church and do their laundry. Some of the domestics, maids, only had a half day off and were expected to be back at their owners' houses by 6 p.m. to fix the evening meal. Domestics were not paid the minimum wage because they were provided housing, in the home where they worked. Their pay was $150 a month. Some of the construction crews also did not get minimum wage, only $200 a month. Most people working in the government were locals or people from the mainland and earned a lot more than the contract workers. Of the 45,000 population on the island, 15,000 were locals, Carolinians and Chamorros and Holies like me from the mainland, and the remainder were contract workers. The girls in the nightclubs and the ones in the sewing factories were Filipino or Chinese. I was not popular with business owners when I started asking questions about the living conditions of the workers. All the construction workers were Filipinos or from Bangladesh. I learned a lot about Filipino food. For the late nights at the paper, someone would make a run to a local food shop and bring back hot bowls of godo. It is a thick rice soup, loaded with garlic, with little bits of tripe in it. At 2 a.m. it tastes good and kick-started the energy we needed to finish the paper for the press run. Godo ingredients. 2 pounds tripe, about 3 c cut into bite-size pieces, 8 c water. 5 tablespoons vegetable oil. 2 tablespoons minced garlic. 1 large onion, diced. 1.5 c uncooked rice. 1.5 tablespoon salt. 2 tablespoons garlic minced and fried till brown. 1/4 c chopped green onions. 1/4 teaspoon ground black pepper. Directions: put tripe and water into a large stock pot, bring to a boil, then reduce heat and simmer until tender, about 3 hours. Add more water if needed to prevent sticking. Drain tripe, reserving 6 c of broth, and set aside. In another pot, heat 3 tablespoons oil and sauté garlic and onion until garlic is light brown and onion transparent. Add the rice and sauté for 5 minutes. Add reserved broth, bring mixture to a boil, stirring occasionally, reduce heat to simmer and continue cooking for another 30 minutes or until rice is done. Meanwhile, heat 2 tablespoons oil in a skillet and fry 2 tablespoons garlic till golden brown. Set aside. After rice is cooked, add the tripe and salt, and continue cooking au heat for 5 minutes. Serve in soup bowls, sprinkle fried finely minced garlic, chopped green onions and ground pepper. Filipino food takes a lot of preparation, compared to American cooking. I learned to have patience and not expect instant results. I met Gail, in the grocery store the next day. She was from Arizona and the physician's assistant at the local medical clinic. She introduced herself and noticed my sweaty face. "Oh," she said, "don't worry about the humidity. It takes 90 days and then you won't notice it at all, and you won't be sweating all the time." I will be darned. I sweated on the 89th day, but on the 90th, the weather felt normal to me and I never had a problem with humidity for the entire 5 years on Saipan and Guam. All the workers in the stores, bank, construction firms, bars, nightclubs, and retail stores were contract workers for the owners of the establishments. This meant what free time I had was usually spent with the Filipino workers. They were fun-loving and welcomed me. I was introduced to all manner of Filipino food. I liked most of it, but there were a few things I would not try: balut, fertilized eggs, half egg and half chicken cooked in a pile of salt for 3 weeks. Or the blood sausage. I became an instant fan of adobo, one of the most popular of all Filipino dishes. Chicken adobo, adobong manok. Ingredients: 1 3 pounds chicken cut into serving pieces, 1/2 c soy sauce, 3/4 c white vinegar, 1 or 2 heads of garlic, crushed, 2 bay leaves, 1/2 a teaspoon peppercorns, salt to taste. Directions: in a large pot, bring the chicken pieces, soy sauce, vinegar, garlic, bay leaves and peppercorns to a boil, then reduce heat and simmer for 30 minutes. Remove the chicken pieces and broil them for 10 minutes. The sauce will continue to cook until it is reduced by half. Add the salt to taste. Cover the broiled chicken pieces with the sauce. Serve hot. Or the way Inang always did it, leave the chicken in the sauce and each person helps themselves to chicken and spoon sauce over the top of it. I have made this with cider vinegar and have noticed no difference in taste. I wrote a story about all the construction on the island and was surprised, no, appalled, that there were no building codes. There was no building department, no inspections, and the contractors were primarily from Japan and China. I decided to talk to the senators of the island government about adopting a building code. none of them had any idea that contractors could be cheating them using substandard building materials or unapproved, per the ICBO, construction methods. They admitted that they thought about having a building code, but that meant they would have to have a building department also. I agreed and urged them to bring forth a bill enacting a building code. I wrote the bill for them and said it would be a good idea to at least hire a building inspector familiar with island building. They passed the bill, the governor signed it, and they hired an inspector from Hawaii. Of course, I didn't just go to the senators without first investigating some complaints I had heard about the low-income housing, which was only 5 years old. Much of the housing in the Marianas is made of poured concrete. With so many typhoons to endure every year, lumber is not used except for some interior finishes. The little shacks in the jungle with tin roofs regularly get blown down, and the people in them expect to rebuild after every typhoon. I went to look at the low-income housing because some residents filed a class action suit against the builders. They alleged the buildings were substandard and unsafe. I looked at one house and the iron rebar embedded in the concrete for the ceiling was visible where it had peeled off due to rust. And the wife said, "Every time I touch the stove, I get a shock. I'm scared to use it." Further inspection revealed many hazards from shoddy construction. The financing for the low-income housing had come from one of the government agencies, and none of the employees knew anything about safe construction practices. When I asked the director how many inspections the project had, he said, "Oh, we didn't do any inspections, because this was a turnkey project." Apparently, no one explained to him that a turnkey project means the company will do all phases of the building. The director mistakenly thought the government had no responsibility for the project until it was completed, and the keys were turned over to the new residents. One local person innocently volunteered some information about the construction crew. They worked at night a lot. They set up big spotlights and did a lot of concrete work. When I asked how they were able to mix such large batches of concrete, which takes a lot of water, he added, "Oh, they just went down to the beach and got seawater." Now we know why the concrete ceilings were failing and there was so much rust around the rebar. I had left Saipan by the time the class action suit was brought to court, but I found out the construction company had to pay millions to the government of Saipan, the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas. The new building inspector made sure all the repairs were made using the required codes. I discovered a flight to Guam on the weekends. It gave me a small shot of America. Guam is a territory of the U.S., but it is really a Pacific island with an overlay of American things. I joined Sigma Delta Chi, a group of professional journalists, writing and broadcast people, and found their meetings informative and refreshing. I also attended 12-step meetings there, and Buddhist meetings. I had not found either group on Saipan, but later found out that both groups had been formed there after I left. Now, about Reggie. He was a construction worker, carpenter, and had heard there was a new American woman at the newspaper. He wandered in on a Monday night and we struck up a conversation. He was happy-go-lucky, always cracking jokes, and really did have a sunny disposition. He asked me out to dinner, and since I know how much these guys were paid, I tried to beg off. He said we would go to the local Filipino restaurant that all the workers went to, where we got the godo. I think we had adobo and a dessert, which is a cousin to an ice cream soda, called Halo Halo. It's basically shaved ice with chunks of candied lychee nuts, pineapple bits, shaved young coconut, and covered over with condensed milk. Reggie showed me how to mix it all up with a long spoon, and I was glad he showed me, because I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be eaten in layers. He started stopping by the paper on our late Monday and Thursday nights. He was a lot of fun and he always made me laugh. As you already know, I am a sucker for a guy with a good sense of humor. Pretty soon Reggie started getting serious with me. I told him, "I'm a lot older than you and I don't think a serious relationship will work." He kept pestering me and soon I agreed. We got married, but we really couldn't live together. He had a little one-room shack he had constructed for himself, and I wasn't supposed to have any visitors stay overnight. His shack caught fire one night and he really lost everything. My boss relented and said he could stay at the house. We saved some money and I took my first trip to the Philippines, to meet his family. They lived in Malolos, Bulacan. Everyone told me, oh yes, that is where all the poets are from. The family house was in a barrio called Canyolate. So, we took the train from the airport with bags and boxes to the Blue Line. Then we boarded the bus for Malolos, which I dubbed the Pinatubo Rain Bus, an hour trip, in the pouring rain. We hired a tricycle scooter with a sidecar and a canvas roof and arrived at the house. It was a large two-story house with orchids blooming in a tall tree. There was little river fishpond with goldfish in it. And I met Inong, Reggie's mom. I met all the brothers and sisters, four girls and two boys, and everyone was so cordial. We brought gifts for everyone, that is always expected. Towels and sheets and jackets. Nothing frivolous. Inong introduced me to pancit bihon. I watched her make it and thought I could duplicate it myself. She gave me her recipe, which I have included. Pancit bihon ingredients: 4 c chicken stock, 1 quarter c soy sauce, 1 pkg, 8 ounces, rice noodles, 2 tablespoons oil, half a pound shrimp, peeled and deveined, 3 pork steaks, cut into bite-size pieces, 1 onion sliced thinly, 2 cloves garlic minced, 2 chicken breasts, deboned and sliced thinly, 2 carrots, peeled and sliced thinly on the bias, 2 stalks of celery, sliced thinly on the bias, 1 small cabbage chopped, salt and pepper to taste, lemons or limes cut in wedges. Directions: chop and or slice all vegetables and put aside. Put the oil in a frying pan and brown the garlic and cook the onion to translucent stage. Heat the chicken stock and add the onion and garlic, the cut up chicken, shrimp, and pork. Add the noodles, and when meat and shrimp are cooked and the noodles are almost done, all the vegetables and soy sauce. Cook until vegetables are tender but not overdone. This is one of the recipes that is forgiving if it only contains chicken or pork or shrimp. All the vegetables are required. Doubling the recipe is easy and can always be expanded for unexpected dinner guests. All the locals on Saipan and Guam speak English. They are taught in English all the way through high school. The official languages of CNMI and Guam are English and Chamorro. Chamorro is a combination of Malay language, Spanish and English. When spoken, it sounds to me like Spanish spoken by a German, lots of guttural sounds. The names of villages on Guam and Saipan are from the Chamorro language and often use alliterate sounds, like talafafo, or mong mong. The Treasurer of the United States, who signs all paper currency, was from Guam, Rose Gumatatao Rios. A small island off the coast of Saipan is Manajahan, and there is a weathered cannon there and the remains of a World War II landing craft. In the bay in Saipan there is an American tank which never made it to the island during the Battle of Saipan. It is now a tourist attraction for snorkelers. The best example of how these relics came to be attractive to fish is in the Bay of Truk. The Americans bombed the Japanese fleet which was hiding in the bay. I'm not sure about the exact number of ships that were destroyed, 15, I think, but it is a scuba diver's paradise and most ardent scuba divers want to go there. I learned to snorkel but not scuba dive. Scuba required a lot of equipment and rigorous training, and I never could put the money or time together for it. Another surprise was seeing local women, who always wore skirts, kick off their sandals and wade into the ocean up to their knees, and sometimes sit down in 2 feet of water, then would get up, walk off the beach and wring out their skirts and kind of wave them a little bit to dry. They put their sandals on and walked or got in their cars and drove away. I thought I must try this. The reason for the skirts or dresses is the humidity. Long pants are just too hot and sticky for that weather. I quickly wore skirts or dresses exclusively on Saipan. One day Reggie and I went to the beach. He had on cutoffs and suggested we wade into the water like the locals. The water was warm, warm, not bath water but close. I came out of the water, wrung out my skirt and waved it a little, and it almost dried completely in 5 minutes. The most amazing thing to me was no salt water, itchy feeling on my skin. No wonder people could just go for a dip in the ocean to cool off, wring out their clothes and go back to their work or chores. Saipan is really the top of a mountain. If it were not submerged, it would be taller than Mount Everest. It is the deepest part of the ocean in the whole world, and no one has ever been able to go all the way to the ocean floor. Scientists are working on submergible drones to go there because there are creatures, they suspect, that live there. So, when you stand on the beach on the west side, you can't see the beach on the other side. The island is 5 miles wide and 12 miles long. Capitol Hill is at the top of the steep drive. All the government offices are there and a lot of government employee housing. It is a breathtaking view to look out at the turquoise water and see the small island of Manajaha. They also have flame trees, which bloom in the summer and fall. Trees with giant red flowers frame the view of the ocean. Truly breathtaking. Going down the road on the backside reveals quite a bit of jungle and local housing, a lot of tin roof shacks and a winding road to the beach. The beach on that side of Saipan is rocky and there is not much sand. On the north tip of the island is the village of Yigo, pronounced Jigo. Charmoro pronunciation of Spanish words is different. Ys are always pronounced like J's. Double L's are not pronounced like a Y but also pronounced with the J sound. So, tortillas are tortillas. The Japanese had occupied Saipan between World War I and World War II. They enslaved the local Chamorros and refused to let them speak their own language. They didn't allow the children to go to school but had them working in the sugar cane fields. They even installed a small railroad line to bring the sugar cane to the commercial port. There was housing for Japanese families, and at the height of the residency it is estimated there were 35,000 Japanese living there. The Japanese were terrified of Americans. They had been brainwashed to believe that Americans were cannibals, and if they were captured, they would be eaten. As the invasion started, families committed mass suicides, jumping off the cliffs into the ocean, the soldiers, the wives and all the children. There is also a high bluff where suicides took place for those unable to get to the ocean cliff. It was dubbed Bonsai Cliff by the Americans. Very few Japanese prisoners were found, just a few where they were hiding. The locals hid in caves, also. They hid under bushes and were terrified not only of the fighting but of the prospect of being an American meal. One man I interviewed was just a small boy during the invasion. He said the family hid under some bushes, and when he looked up and saw a GI, he was so scared he could not run. The GI motioned for him to stand up and come toward him. As he did, the GI reached in his pocket and brought out a candy bar. He offered it to the boy, but he shook his head, thinking it was poison. So, the GI took a bite of the candy bar and then handed it to him. As his family watched him bite into the candy, they emerged from the bushes and were met by several GIs who took them to safety. All the islands of the Marianas were a trust territory of the U.S. until 1990. They finally got their complete independence and discovered they needed to find new ways to bring money on the islands. Rota, the closest island to Guam, only has 3,000 people. Tinian, which has a commercial port, relies on fishing and transporting large catches to other nations' vessels. It is famous for being the birthplace of the A-bombs over Japan from the Enola Gay. So here on this small island, the two main roads are Broadway and 42nd St. Another island, Pagan, has an active volcano, and all the people there were ordered to leave. So, tourism is the main source of income for the Saipanese. Several luxury hotels have been built on rented land. The Chamorro families who own the land have 50-year leases with the owners and builders of the hotels. They provide an extremely healthy income for those landowners. The main supermarket is owned by Joe Tenorio, and he hires Chamorros to work in the store or for other projects he has. His reasoning is this: If we don't offer our young people work and teach them about business, they will leave the island. Without young people, these islands will have horrible problems. Good thoughts. Although for any bright young people who want to go to college, they have the option to go to UOG, University of Guam, or some opt for Hawaii. A few brave souls have gone to college in Seattle. They can join the U.S. Armed Forces, and many do, making it a lifelong career. There are two recipes that are true: Chamorro, Findine, and Kelligan. Many variations are put together depending on the origins of the recipe from a village. The Findine recipe I like the best comes from Marizo, the southernmost village. My coworker Charo gave me this recipe. Findine ingredients: 1 c soy sauce, 1/2 c lemon juice, 1/2 c white vinegar, 2-4 bhuni peppers, can use small Thai peppers, 1 onion. Directions: slice the onion thinly and put all ingredients in a mason jar. Do not put in a plastic container, affects the taste. Shake thoroughly and can be used right away but gets better as it ages. Refrigerate. Keeps for months in the refrigerator. Findine is an all-purpose sauce. It's a wonderful marinade for beef. Kelligan, recipe coming up. Brushed on chicken or ribs for barbecue, a teaspoon of it in gravy adds a little spice, and just a little poured over plain rice is delicious too. The term Kelligan, I thought, only referred to chicken. I found out the name applies to fish, seafood and beef also. Chicken Kelligan ingredients: 1 whole chicken cut up, 5 to 6 lemons or 1 pkg lemon powder, about 2 tablespoons, 1 small onion chopped fine, 1/2 c grated young coconut, green no ripe or brown, 2 to 3 bhuni peppers, salt and pepper to taste. Directions: barbecue chicken until just cooked. Do not overcook it. Cut up the chicken and bone. Chop the chicken very fine. A food processor works best. Chop up the peppers fine and combine with diced onion, chicken and lemon juice. Mixture should be moist. Add salt and pepper to taste. This is a traditional lunch, and many of the mom and pop little stores carry freshly made chicken Kelligan wrapped up in a tortilla in plastic wrap. They usually cost $1, and it is plenty for lunch. It is also an appetizer served with tortilla sections for a large quantity. Beef Kelligan ingredients: 2 pounds of flank steak sliced into thin strips, 4 lemons, 1 small onion sliced, 6 bhuni peppers, salt to taste, cherry tomatoes. Directions: place sliced beef in bowl, add lemon juice, onion and peppers. Variation on beef Kelligan is to put the sliced beef in a bowl with the soy sauce type Findine. Add cherry tomatoes and more sliced onion. On Saipan, this is the most popular beef Kelligan. Fish Kelligan ingredients: 1 to 2 pounds fresh tuna, 8 to 10 lemons, 1 teaspoon salt, 3 to 4 bhuni peppers, 1 small onion, chopped. Directions: cut tuna into small, thin pieces and place in a large bowl. Add onions, salt, peppers, and mix. Add lemon juice and mix well. Refrigerate to chill or eat as is. Shrimp Kelligan is basically the same as fish Kelligan. All the shrimp recipes call for pouring boiling water over the raw, deveined shrimp. Some recipes call for mashing the shrimp. Others say to cut the shrimp into small pieces, all say refrigerate to serve. On both Saipan and Guam, there seem to be a fiesta almost every week. Saints' Days are celebrated with a small parade from the church to the main plaza of every village. Then many of the homes open their doors and invite everyone in for a buffet. By the time one gets to the end of the line, the plate is piled high with everything, including Kelligan, fried chicken, potato salad, boiled ube, a purple potato, and other specialties of the village or that household. It is impossible to eat everything, and when the plate appears to be almost empty, someone will rush over with a new plate of food. Beer is usually served at a fiesta, although a local alcoholic beverage made from palm trees, tubo, is also served. Many of the servicemen from the Air Force Base as well as the Navy personnel have attended fiestas and had some great stories about overeating. I was offered a job as the news editor of the Guam Tribune, after only being on Saipan for 8 months. The pay was better, and I was in hot water with my boss, as I had written several editorials about the treatment of the contract workers. He told me I had to stop writing about the workers, and I told him I wouldn't unless there was some improvement in their treatment. I rented a room in a local's house when I moved to Guam. I had bought a car on Saipan, which was shipped to Guam, but I had no funds for my own apartment or house. I started to work at the Tribune and really enjoyed working with so many professional journalists. Disaster struck after I had been there only 6 weeks. An out-of-season typhoon hit the island and literally destroyed the whole building. The owner decided not to rebuild, thus, ended the Guam Tribune and all 100 employees were without work. One of the members of our journalist group, Mark, told me he had a job as the chief of staff of a Guam senator. Guam has a unicameral government, and all the senators are elected at large. Each one represents all the residents of Guam, quite different from mainland government. I asked Mark if any of the other senators needed someone, and he said that Senator Mayu, his boss, was looking for a committee secretary as the present one had just resigned to move off island. I immediately revised my resume and did some research on the senator and made sure I put my construction experience in the resume also. When the senator interviewed me, he said, "Well, I don't know if you are the right person for this job, as I have the Committee on Housing and Community Development." I replied, "You just read my resume." He offered me the job at a genuinely nice salary with all the benefits a government job includes. I told him I only had one problem: I did not want to be called a secretary, I wanted a different title. When he asked me what I wanted, I told him, "Legislative analyst." He agreed, and I was the only legislative analyst, while all the other senators had committee secretaries. I blush at my egotism now, what nerve. Meanwhile, Reggie was stuck on Saipan. He applied for a green card and was put on a waiting list. He had no access to Guam until the green card was granted. This was the first step in applying for U.S. citizenship. I would fly up to Saipan to visit him on weekends, and several times I would join him in traveling to the Philippines. After 3 years, Senator Mayu decided he did not need me full-time and that I would only be working 20 hours a week. I declined, saying I would no longer have the benefits, as a part-timer. Reggie got his green card and immediately found work as a carpenter. We decided to form our own construction company, and Bernardo Construction received its contractor's license. We won a contract for doing the carpentry work on the rehab of the medical clinic on Anderson Air Force Base. We did small jobs and started to make good money. I saw the government of Guam was funding the changes for the baseball stadium. I got the plans and talked to the salesperson, Dave, in Honolulu. This was an international affair. The stadium had bench seats, and the plans called for replacing all the bench seat with three different styles of numbered seating in two colors. The manufacturer of the seating was in Sydney, Australia. Reggie and I worked feverishly to prepare our bid for the project. Time was a factor, in that the Micronesian Games were to be held in the stadium the last week in March. The bid opening was mid-January. The seating was to come by cargo ship in February. We submitted our bid, and two other bidders were also present. It was obvious that these two contractors had done a lot of government work and were very friendly with the Guam project manager. Much to their surprise, Bernardo Construction won the contract. Reggie put together a crew of four carpenters from the Philippines, two from Panape, one local Chamorro, and Paul, a Nigerian refugee who was in Guam seeking asylum. Luckily, everyone spoke English. The container finally arrived the beginning of March. We only had 17 to 18 days to do all 5,200 seats. We provided a case of Pepsi and a big water jug of ice water every day for the workers. They only got a half hour for lunch, and our start time was 6 a.m. They knew they would work long days, but they were paid the overtime, per the U.S. government Davis-Bacon provisions. I also promised them a week's pay as a bonus when we finished on time. We had to quit by 6 p.m. as there were baseball games every evening. Of course, this involved cleanup and lots of yellow caution tape. We were lucky one night, when it rained, but stopped about 5 p.m. the baseball game was cancelled, and we worked until 11 p.m. that night. When we were about halfway finished with the project, two things happened that could have been the end of Bernardo Construction and my peace of mind. We discovered severe shortages in the containers and an overabundance of other items. Also, my mother, who had been ill, passed away. I told my brother I couldn't come back for the funeral until the project was finished, March 25th at the latest. He scheduled the memorial service for March 26. Dave came from Honolulu and we looked at the plans. He pulled out the set of plans he had, and we discovered he had failed to replace the original plan with the revisions the fire marshal had imposed. We were able to patch things together and we finished the project on time. I told the Guam project manager about needing to go back to Florida for my mother's funeral and to pay us the full amount, not withhold 10% for 90 days, which is standard construction practice. He walked my invoice through, and I wrote all the checks to the crew and paid all the vendors by noon the next day. That night I boarded the plane for Honolulu, and gained a day going across the international dateline, took the plan to LA, onto Dallas and finally arrived in Tampa. My brother picked me up and took me to the memorial service which was waiting for my arrival before starting. The rest is a bit of a whirl. My brother, Ted, and my sister, Christine and I went back to Mom's condo and Ted had already talked to a lawyer about giving us our inheritance. We had sizable checks in our hands that same day. I was an emotional wreck and in a moment of weakness bought a little house in Bonita Springs, a town just south of Fort Myers. Then I had to go back to Guam as we had another project starting. All the paperwork was finally done, and I moved into the house in June. Reggie stayed in Guam, as he was in the middle of citizenship processing. I did not realize at the time I bought the house, but I am not a Florida person. I like big cities, not quiet little towns. Within a month of moving in, I knew I had made a mistake. I finally found a job that just paid a little over minimum wage at a local newspaper. I loved the work, but the bosses were not happy with me and I got fired in a few months. I did some phone work for a friend, and finally Reggie came about October with his new citizenship. He stayed only about 2 months because he had gotten a carpentry job on Guam, he said. So, he left, and I decided to sell the house and take my chances back in LA for work. The house sold right away. My son Jim came from California. We loaded up the U-Haul, tethered my little car on the back and took 3 days to drive back to LA. I stayed with a friend in South Pasadena, but despite my earnest effort to get a job in construction, I did not get one offer. I finally took a job as a part-time editor for the Pomona Progress Bulletin, having to drive almost 30 miles to work when I was on call. Meanwhile, I knew I would have to get back into construction, it paid better. And after checking various parts of the country, I saw where Las Vegas had a construction boom going on. I applied for a job via the internet and drove over for an interview with Clark County. I got the job, and immediately felt like I was reborn, a big city 24-hour town, just what I like.